downtown for three. It's 56-45 at the half. Technical, number 23, 3 second violation, number 11. Traveling, number 4.
You're listening to Hamster Wheel Sports, the podcast where we refuse to discuss any sissy topics that are not relating directly to sports. My name is Matt Seeley, and I'm here with my beloved co-host, Book Bratch.
Kobe Bryant once said, "Everything negative, pressure, challenges, are all an opportunity for me to rise." That's what playoff basketball is about.
You know what Kobe Bryant also said, man? He said that, work waking up early when you don't want to, putting up shots in the gym, working hard when you don't want to, that is living the dream. Kobe Bryant is an inspirational force because his work ethic is unparalleled.
But still, the greatest playoff quote of all time is Dennis Rodman, who said, "I couldn't care less if the guy I'm guarding has HIV. I'm going to slam him anyway."
Oh, I forgot about that one, man. That might be our greatest diplomat out there. Anyhow, Book, I'm going to shake off the rust here. I mean, it's been so long since we've done a Hamster Wheel Sports, dude. I love this podcast. It's been about 15 episodes or so. The last time we did one with you, me, and Judge James Ryan, let's just check here. It was December 7th, 2017. Okay?
That was wrapping up the first half.
Not even, dude. We were just getting going, and then we fell off the edge of a cliff, man. Hamster Wheel Sports died, and was just eliminated, gone fishing, just like so many teams this past week. Just for your amusement, Book, I'm gonna read you the description on the podcast that we last posted. Okay,
all right.
The last Hamster Wheel Sports. It says, Book, Matt, and James discuss the two Western Conference teams hoping to make the playoffs, the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Utah Jazz. Now, why we were talking about the Jazz and the Wolves at that point, I have no idea. I have no recollection. But they both made it.
No, that was the Jazz in the midst of their big winning streak after they had gone Gobert back. And I would like to say that I was a firm believer of the Jazz, and I was assuring that they were going to make the playoffs.
Hey, we have it on wax, man. You can go back and listen to it.
It's all there.
But anyways, Book, let's get back in the here and now. Hamster Wheel Sports is back, and we ain't going anywhere. That is until after free agency dries up. Then we'll be gone again. But you know what? Here we are. We're a little bit late. The first round of the playoffs is in the books, Book. And I just want to kind of like catch up. So if we had to kind of explain what happened in the first round of the 2018 NBA playoffs to a basketball fan who was cryogenically frozen on December 7th, 2017, so he's just waking up and he's saying, "What's going on in the NBA?" Well, let's tell this individual, okay? So, the biggest Raptors fan in BC?
Yeah.
So let's start there, man.
All right, yeah, Raps Wiz, 1-8 matchup in the East, but not a typical 1-8 matchup. I think you definitely saw it here when they had a healthy, you know, John Wall. They're a good team. And this is one of those series that even though it took them 6 games, which as a number one seed, you would normally think would be kind of a disappointment. I thought that the Wizards earned their victory. And, you know, the Raptors, they played a solid series. I think the bench really struggled. Siakam and Poeltl especially seemed to struggle, especially at the beginning of the series, just with the moment. And then with no Van Vliet running the show, that whole unit really struggled. And especially when the bench was out there with DeRozan, which was a slight positive during the season, but had a negative 60 net rating over the 6-game series and was really hurting them. But once they got Van Vliet back there, they took care of business in that final game on the road, which as a contender, that's something that defines you as a contender. Going into that, just shutting down a series, going into the house, you know, of your opponent, shutting down that series.
Is it concerning that a second-year player such as Van Vliet is so crucial to their success?
No, I wouldn't say so. It's like their bench is so important to their success, and Van Vliet is their most important player on their bench, you know?
Overall, how did their bench do in this series, do you think?
Well, they struggled, but their performance in that last game was really, like with VanVleet, and they just look great.
There had to be a cloud hanging over the Raptors franchise with the Wizards, especially. I mean, the perfect storyline would have been if they just swept him and put him out early. Didn't happen, unfortunately. You had a little bit of the anxiety, as all Raptors fans feel.
But at least it was the Wizards played well, you know?
Yeah. Were you disappointed in Game 4?
Yeah, that Game 4 game was very disappointing. Like, they were up 14 in the third. You want to wrap that up. And they definitely fell into some bad habits there at the end of the fourth. Although that's definitely not, you know, just them. I think offense can get pretty ugly there in the end of close games.
How did our boys do, Lowry and DeRozan?
Well, that's, I think, DeRozan, he had some great moments. He had some moments where he wasn't the best. But in the playoffs, it's always been Lowry who has... See, DeRozan struggled in the playoffs because they just run ISO and he gets, like, you know, a ton of attention and all of his shots end up being, like, tough contested twos. And so, yeah, of course he shoots bad, you know? So I feel like I'm less worried about DeRozan from a mental side, whereas Kyle Lowry, I mean, that guy has just completely disappeared in the playoffs where, like, it looks like he doesn't know how to shoot a ball.
Mm-hmm.
And like, for him, it definitely at times is mental. And so it was nice to see that he had a good shooting game every single game, and especially in the closeout game, was the best player on the floor.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that Kyle Lowry hit the third most threes in the regular season. And I mean, let's hope it continues. I mean, eventually you have to get over the hump, right? I mean, they're looking good, and they're going against a pretty weak looking Cavs team. But we'll talk about that in a bit. JV is looking good.
Yes. I mean, NBA Twitter was going crazy that JV didn't play a single fourth quarter minute in the first four games of the series. And finally he got fourth quarter minutes there in game five, and he was a difference maker as soon as he came in on both sides of the floor. And then they went to him again in game six. I think he played like 30 minutes, you know, a good workload. And once again, he came up, and you know, Valanciunas is never going to be a great defender, but he's gotten to a point now where at least, like, he'll contest things at the rim without fouling. Like, he seems to have really started to master verticality. He's, you know, I think they're running a better system for him where they're allowing him to drop back a little more and having the guards, like, in the pick and roll, they're having him drop back and having the guards fight over the pick and contest late, which is an easier system for him to play. And offensively, the guy is just a beast. DeRozan... When they ran the DeRozan JV pick and roll, they were scoring 1.3 points per possession. And when they ran the Kyle Lowry JV pick and roll, 1.6 points per possession,
mm-hmm.
which is insane.
Wow. I mean, it's been there has been a popular belief that there wasn't room for Jonas Valanciunas on this team, or maybe even this league. But I'm glad to see he's thriving and can contribute to this title contender.
Well, I mean, it's because of him. Like, the JV of last year doesn't have a place on this team, on a contender, right? Like, he improved.
Right. And also, look at the defense of OG Anunoby. His coverage on Wall was exciting to watch.
Not just OG, but Pascal Siakam. Like, in crunch time in game six, they were putting a power forward on him.
Mm-hmm.
And Siakam's like... He is such a incredible asset because he can guard 1-4. Like, the only player he can't guard is, like, a big, strong scorer. But, like, you know, you look at in the next series, I mean, we'll get to it, but, like, that there's no one that he can't guard in that series.
And how have we not mentioned that they won a game one? The Toronto Raptors won game one of the series against the Washington Wizards with a feisty John Wall who always steps up in the playoffs. To respect time here, Book, we got to move on. Is there anything else you want to say about your favorite team?
Kyle Lowry's defense was very poor during the regular season, and it was nice to see that that was just kind of a regular season thing. He looked really refreshed this whole series because not only was he doing great offensively, but he was playing great defense on Bradley Beal.
Way to go, Raptors! Thank you for avoiding a game seven, and thanks for taking care of business against those trash-talking Wizards. Let's move on, man, to my favorite team, my beloved Boston Celtics, dude. They played the first Game 7 of the 2018 playoffs. They were rejuvenated by the return of Marcus Smart, who isn't quite Marcus starting as he should. I mean, why not? I mean, this team is missing its two best players, Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward.
It was pretty funny, though, just before you continue. During Game 7, I can't remember who the color guy was, but there was at least three times he accidentally called him Marcus Start.
We copyright that. Yeah, dude, I mean, like, Marcus Smart, as soon as he entered Game 5 when he returned, because they were knotted at 2-2, as soon as he enters the game, then he is all over the string of possessions. And, I mean, he just does so much for that team. And yet he went 2-for-9 or something like that. I feel a confidence when he's out there on the floor. Yeah, I mean, Terry Rozier's balling.
Outplayed Eric Bledsoe.
He is so clutch, man. Also, Bledsoe. It was disappointing to see his performance. Yeah,
and especially when he made those comments about Rozier not knowing who he was.
Yeah, what was with that? You're not playing as good as him. Why are you...
I hate Boston, but I'll give it to the crowd, though. The "Who is Bledsoe" chant was pretty good.
Boston has so many dudes that are balling out right now, and they're playing with house money. I mean,
yeah, that's exactly it. They're playing with house money.
Yeah.
And next year, I don't like this team is going to be impressive.
Can you explain to me why Al Horford is good at defense? Because before he came to Boston, he was notoriously bad at defense.
That's not exactly true. I mean,
maybe it's reputation. Maybe it's the perception because LeBron just...
Because he was always
destroyed him.
Yeah, that's
undefeated against Al Horford. But like
he's not a premier rim protector.
But now he's an elite defender.
Yeah, he's just a really solid defender. He can switch on to different guys and not exactly get embarrassed. And he's just a really cerebral player.
He still seems allergic to rebounds sometimes. Yeah. But I mean, in terms of leadership, I mean
that's kind of a new thing. Because when he was in Atlanta, like he had years where he was averaging over 10 rebounds a game.
Love Al Horford, man.
But, you know, I guess, you know, the years start getting on those knees.
Before we move on to the Bucks, because I have a couple comments on the Bucks, Brown and Tatum are so impressive. I mean, Brown is going to miss game one here in the next series with a hamstring injury. But
like it's insane that one of those guys, assuming everyone's healthy, is going to be moved to the bench next year.
Dude.
Unless they go with Horford at center. Like, they have Horford at center. Then you go Tatum and Brown at like two wings in there, and then you go with as your two guards, Gordon Hayward, Kyrie Irving. That's an insane team.
Yeah,
then you have like an awesome like backup guard as Rozier. I feel like it'll be hard to bring Smart back. Although if I'm another team looking for a point guard, Terry Rozier.
Oh, he's looking good right now. I mean, like the
free
guards.
Free Rozier, man.
Guards thrive in the Brad Stevens offenses. So, do you think it's just a product of that, or do you think this kid's special?
All he has to work on is finishing at the rim. He seems like he's not great at that yet, but like he's clearly looks like a great shooter, and he's a good defender.
And this isn't out of nowhere since Kyrie Irving went down either. Terry Rozier has been impressing all year long.
Yeah.
I'm kind of thinking of that game he won in Indiana when he just stole that stupid inbounds from Bogdanovich.
Yeah.
And who, by the way, we'll get to him next, but he played awful in Game 7 to Cleveland, Indiana. But I'm going to be more on task and stay with this series. Okay, Celtics, you're playing with house money. Man, your future's bright. You got so many assets, so many great players. Jaylen Brown looks just like he's going to be like among the top five players in the league one day. I miss you, Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward. Come back soon. So anyways, let's talk about the Bucks, dude. Why, like, this team has so much potential.
Yeah.
I saw Thon Maker out there, and I was like, why isn't Thon Maker like the great equalizer of the NBA with what this guy can do? Specifically in, I forget what game it was, game three or game four, when he had three blocks in a possession, and he just couldn't miss from deep. And I was like, maybe... I tend to fall in love with players if they have a good game book. I don't look at a large sample size. I stay in the moment. And that moment, I was like, Thon Maker, why isn't this his league?
Yeah. You know, just in general for the Bucks. I mean, Giannis said after the game that he was disappointed and he felt like they were the better team. And it was like, you guys better be the better team. You know? Like, you were supposed to be a quality team this year. Maybe not necessarily, like, obviously, maybe it was a year early talking about, like, being a contender. But people definitely thought they'd be better than the Raps. You know, like, they were supposed to be a very good team. And they went up against Boston with no Kyrie Irving, no Gordon Hayward. In that game seven, Jaylen Brown only played, what, two quarters? He didn't come back after that. They didn't have Marcus Smart for the first five games, I believe, or four?
First four.
Like, you were going up against a team with so many injuries. You better be the best team. Because if you're not a better team now, you've got no shot in the next few years.
I'll be honest, dude. I'm a Celtics fan. I was amazed they won the series, especially after watching game six.
Well, I think, the Bucks coaching, I think, is terrible.
Well, who is even their coach right now?
Prunty, or whatever his name
right.
is. Yeah.
It looks like a super generic coach that, like, just the animation got fucked up in NBA 2K or something.
Game seven, at one point, they had Shabazz Muhammad, Jason Terry, and there was, oh man, there was somebody else that was like, what is going on here? I think it was Dellavedova. And I was like, what is going on here? Is this actually like a playoff lineup? That was just like, you'd think you would have better rotations. And just, if Jason Terry is like the guy you go to when you're in trouble.
But if you're a Bucks fan, you're laughing, right? You're like, look at this. We got stupid, like, potential defensively. We got Giannis and Antetokounmpo. We're good. Bledsoe is disappointed, especially after he forced his way out of Phoenix. I don't know why he's not, like, why not be like, look at what we have. Why don't we just be a dark horse and storm our way? What is the dysfunction?
I mean, Jabari was disappointing as well. Yeah. Although he did miss most of the year, at least. Yeah. But just like,
looks like he might even be out of there.
But I think they definitely need a coaching change. I mean, they should be good next year, though, right? Like, Giannis is a generational player. Middleton's a very, very good number two. Jabari, I still like Jabari as a player. You know, Henson is you know, a solid rim protector. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I agree with Thon Maker, he had a great playoffs last year, and there was a lot of excitement about him, and then he had a tough season. But they eventually ended up going to him later on in the series. And he played well. His three-point shot still needs work, but he's a decent shooter. Like, you still have to...
It's so irritating to see what the Bucks can do. And this is true of the Wizards, too, in that Toronto series. It's so weird to see them come out in Game 3 and Game 4 and punch the superior team in the mouth, and then in Game 7, shit the bed.
Well, the thing about the Wizards is that I don't think they're a good team, necessarily. Like, their roster construction isn't great.
Mm-hmm. So, anyways, let's move on, dude. Let's move to the West. Let's give the West a little bit of love, man.
Sure.
Let's talk about stats, baby. Let's talk about OKC. So, dude, I want to talk about this first round series between OKC and Utah. Because, look, dude, last summer, OKC loaded up with stars, right? And everybody speculated for an entire year. What will you have to do if you're the Thunder to convince Paul George to say, well, anyways, it turns out that they're out in the first round in six games against the Utah Jazz, who lost Gordon Hayward, the Utah Jazz lost their, since the beginning of last offseason, they lost their first, second, fourth, and sixth highest scores, leading scores per game, okay? And then the Jazz became the fifth seed in the playoffs, and now here they are in the second round, and they beat this fake super team. So, like, just what happened, dude?
Well, just to start with OKC first, I mean, first of all, Carmelo was, of course, a big disappointment, and it was one of those
very sad.
It was one of those things where it was just a situation where he was going to get minutes regardless. And he continued to get big minutes in the series, and he really wasn't helping. And it wasn't until the last couple games that they started to cut down his minutes. That was just a disappointing team. And that last game, like, seeing Paul George shoot 2 for 16, never would have expected that. Always a guy that rose to the occasion. You know, like, it wasn't that surprising that Melo didn't exactly do anything. That was just it was a flawed team. It was a team that just didn't you know, they didn't have a ton of depth. Patrick Patterson was a disappointment. I thought that he would play a bigger role. Obviously, losing Robertson, one of the best, you know, perimeter defenders in the game, that hurt them. But yeah, I mean, the fit didn't work. I still hope, actually, that Paul George comes back. I think there's a chance that Carmelo opts out, even though he can opt in for like $20 million, which is way more than he'll get in the open market. But I don't think he wants to come off the bench, which might be something they'll tell him that that'll happen. But looking at the Jazz, I mean, this all comes down to Donovan Mitchell. No one thought Donovan Mitchell would be able to be a legit number one option on a solid playoff team. And he came in and he just filled the role of Gordon Hayward, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like they, you know, obviously at this point in his career, he's not quite the player Gordon Hayward was, but he's still pretty close. And the key was, as soon as Gobert came back, they were the premier defensive team in the league. Gobert made everything happen there. And who would have thought that a backcourt of basically a two-point guard backcourt of Donovan Mitchell and Ricky Rubio would be so devastating? But they're a great defensive team. They have shooters. Joe Ingles is a great shooter. You know, they got Crowder, who, you know, like, they got rid of Hood, who I'm not a big fan of. Yeah, and they were just a really fun team to watch. And it was just they really did not have a lot of talent offensively, and they just made it happen. I think it was great coaching and just a great defensive team. And I'm loving the run, and I really hope they put up a fight here against the Rockets.
It's bizarre, man, because, like, with the Jazz, I mean, they took a point guard who was, I think, for a few years there, I don't know if it was underappreciated, but he certainly wasn't reaching his potential. And now in his new role with the Jazz, he's an underappreciated defender, and also he's a threat from long distance. He's your ideal point guard, and this happened in Quinn Snyder's system.
Well, the amazing thing that happened, though, is that, like, he plays off the ball quite a bit now. Which is amazing. The idea of playing Ricky Rubio off the ball, like, if you had said that a couple years ago, but, like, Donovan Mitchell is just such a explosive player, and they often have him bring the ball up. I mean, I still am not, Rubio's not like a knockdown shooter by any means, but now at least he can hit him when he's open, and he's not afraid.
Yeah, you said it, man. So, but anyways, man, we can talk about the Jazz in a minute because they're moving on, and it's all smiles in Salt Lake City, buddy. I want to talk about drama, and I want to talk about dysfunction. I want to talk about dirty details, man. OKC, were they a united locker room? I remember, like, before games in the regular season, they would link arms. I mean, it seemed like it was all good. It seemed like they found their stride at times. They were inconsistent, but, like, they found something. What happened in this first round? Why couldn't they put away the Jazz?
Well, officials, like, have, like, maintained, like, sources within the locker room have maintained that there was no dysfunction, and it seemed like they had a camaraderie among their big three. Like, they seemed to get along well, so I don't think it was so much dysfunction. Like, I know Russ and KD didn't necessarily get along, but I feel like people generally like Russ.
Did he have a bad series?
Russ was not the problem, in my opinion. Like, he, especially in that last game, where just no one showed up, and he was just basically willing them into the game. I mean, Russ, the problems with Russ were the problems that Russ had his whole career. You know, he'll often drive to the rim out of control. He'll huck up a bunch of shots. The guy lets it fly from three, even though he's not a good three-point shooter. His defense can be suspect at times, you know, but he's also an explosive player. He plays with a ton of energy. And the one thing you'll say about Russ, though, is sometimes, you know, at the end of series when things are going bad, like, you've seen stars just go out very lamely. Mm. I'm thinking LeBron James cramping. I'm thinking James Harden just putting up 7 points.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But Russ does not go down without a fight. It doesn't matter if he's going to put up 40 shots. He's going down with a fight.
Sure. But, like, who would have thought in this day and age that Ricky Rubio would have won that feud between in a head-to-head battle?
No, Donovan Mitchell won that series. Donovan Mitchell.
Fair enough, dude. Donovan Mitchell. I mean, like, how do you, how does that, how old is that kid?
20.
20?
It was amazing because it was like, can he replicate what he did in the regular season in the playoffs when it's harder to score? And he played better. He scored more points and with a better efficiency.
When things slow down and defenses lock in, and how does, and he's on national television, how does he have this the strength of character to respond in this way and play truly well? I mean like wow, this guy Donovan Mitchell. I have a feeling we'll be talking about him later.
I think just another thing, just quickly, like what Quinn Snyder has done really well is apparently, like, Quinn Snyder told him before the game, we're going to win and you are going to go off. And I think that's something very early in the season. I won my fantasy league and it was a nice victory.
Congratulations.
And Donovan Mitchell was one of my first pickups in the season. And of course it worked out great. And one of the reasons why I picked him up was because I was watching a game really early in the Utah season. And there was a game where in crunch time, they were completely healthy. They had all their players and they were having Donovan Mitchell run the offense. And I was like, whoa. And it like, I think they lost the game. It didn't necessarily go great, but it was clear that they had a lot of confidence in him. And I think he was empowered very early. And when people are empowered, they're more likely to have confidence and to meet their potential completely.
Yeah. I mean, when we get into a little bit of a rookie of the year debate later, we're going to talk about the amazing, unprecedented confidence and ability of these rookies. But let's move on here, Book. Let's talk about another West series. Let's talk about, oh my gosh, let's talk about the Pelicans, dude. I love this team. The Island of Misfit Toys has finally had enough, and they are balling. They lost game one of the Warriors, but I mean, like, who didn't see that coming? But I mean, like, Anthony Davis, a legit MVP candidate, Rajon Rondo, who has proven himself. Like, he'll get up for important games. He just won't bother in unimportant games. But, I mean, like, I said on Hamster Wheel Sports about over a year ago that, like, hey, if you're a coach, you put your ball into the Mercurial point guard's hands and he'll take care of it. He's a maestro. And Drew Holiday, his defense, his scoring. Oh, he's playing on, like, just an all-star level, man. And he's a one-time all-star himself. And Nikola Mirotic, oh, my gosh. Unfortunately, that's as far as I can go. I can't list anyone else on the Pelicans. But, I mean, they took care of the Blazers, and they are looking good. And I love that team.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, like, in terms of that team, I mean, that was a good matchup for them, Portland, because they had the personnel to shut down those explosive guards. Drew Holiday locked up Lillard, McCollum. It didn't matter who he was guarding. And Rondo played great on both ends, of course. And it really worked well having Rondo initiate the offense. He's just so good. Because the thing about Anthony Davis is that there was no one on the Trailblazers that could guard him. And I think this is true for a lot of teams, is that you either have somebody who's quick enough to guard him, that guy's not big enough. Or you have a guy that's big enough, and that guy's not quick enough. You know, so either Ed Davis was guarding him, who's got the quickness, but he doesn't have the size, or Aminu, same deal, or you had Nurkic, who was too slow. And when they had Nurkic on him, I mean, there was just no contest. And when they would try Aminu or Ed Davis, Rondo was so good at, like, seeing when Anthony Davis had the advantage, you know? And, like, throwing a lob up to him, or, like, you know, when maybe Aminu was trying to front Anthony Davis, you know, being able to thread that pass in. And, you know, and then they had some shooters, you know, behind that, whether Etuan Moore, Miller, you know, Ian Clark. It was a fun series. Mirotic is an underrated defender. Although they were putting Mirotic on Nurkic. And it wasn't until game four that they finally started posting Mirotic up, because Mirotic can't exactly guard Nurkic in the post. And I think that was definitely a missed opportunity for the Blazers.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, they definitely were surprised by the Pelicans, who were the lower seed. But I think the Blazers, I don't know if it's accurate to say they were kind of exposed. How can that team be successful?
Okay, well,
they have two small guards.
Well, first of all, everyone's saying blow it up. And it actually reminds me a lot of the Raptors getting swept, because it was the same deal. Like, they were the home team, but there were two teams that were very close in the standings, the Raps, Wiz, and the Pelicans, sure. Blazers. and then just getting their, you know, their butts kicked. And I don't, I like, it's definitely not, I don't think you necessarily have to blow it up. The problem with the Blazers that the Raptors didn't have is the Raptors were fine. They were in a fine cap situation, and they were able to remold their team for the next season around DeRozan and Lowry. You look at the Blazers, they have Lillard and McCollum, who I think those two can, you can be a contender with those two guys, your best guys. I don't know. I think you could. I really like Lillard. The problem is they have so many bad contracts. You know, like you look at like Miles Leonard, you know, who's locked in, and that guy like barely plays. You have Evan Turner. That's a terrible contract.
Well, I mean, why can't he recapture the magic he had at Boston? If he did what he did in Boston and Portland, it'd be great.
But he's just like, he's just such a bad fit for the team because you have two explosive guards. Like Evan Turner needs the ball in his
hands. Yeah, he's a ball handler. He's for not. Sure.
He can't shoot the three, and it's just like, he's just such a bad fit for the team, and he's making so much money. And I'm totally forgetting who's that other bad. They have another bad contract on that team. I'm gonna
look it up, dude. In the meantime, I'm gonna just rant and rave about the Pelicans because, man, I'll tell you one thing, Hammers, is that I absolutely love the Pelicans because I did a NBA 2K. I did an association of season mode with the Pelicans, and I put myself on the team. And we rocked, man. Playing with Anthony Davis, it's just not fair. He is looking like the best player in the NBA. Did you find it?
Yeah. It's actually not too bad, but Mo Harkless.
Yeah. Mo Harkless,
but
yeah.
He's gonna make $11 million next
Their
year.
Their GM is Neil O'Shea, and he seems like a reasonable guy. I hear him on the Woj pod.
Yeah, but he has handed out like that when there was that cap boom. I mean, he effed the whole
that
franchise.
That cap boom, I'm just going to be like spend no time on this, but that was like the most short-sighted, stupid thing. Like for one, it was for one year, the salary cap went up and you paid Solomon Hill. Pelicans also did that, though.
Yeah.
The Pelicans also have four good players, man. That's the thing. And that's why they have no shot against the Warriors, but we'll talk about that later. Okay, dude. We're finding a good pace here. Let's talk about the two laughers in the West, okay? The Houston Rockets versus the mini Minnesota Timberwolves. Anything to say? Minnesota was supposed to be better than an 8 seed, right?
I was hoping that they'd put up a bigger fight. Like,
why is Jimmy Butler their best player? I don't get that.
He should be the best player. No, but yeah. Karl Anthony Towns, I mean, he was, first of all, like, he was taking such few shots and was criminally underused. But also, the blame was somewhat on him. He seemed to have, like, really bad, like, he had very bad lower body strength, and he, like, was just getting bullied a lot. Like, he couldn't get post position. But also, at the same time, like, he's playing, they were playing him, like, 38 minutes a game. Karl Anthony Towns is a bad defender, you know? And you're playing him 38 minutes, and you're not giving him shots? Like, he's just a rebounder out there, basically. But, yeah, that was a frustrating series. You know, I didn't watch a ton of it, but when I did watch... and Wiggins has been just such a disappointment this year. And, you know, Butler, he was banged up. He didn't even play a ton in that final game. Yeah, that was just a disappointing series. I mean, it was like, and Harden didn't even play that well. You know, it's like he had an amazing game one, but after that, he was human. Like, and they still couldn't put up a fight. It'll be interesting what they're going to look like moving forward.
Absolutely. The Golden State Warriors and the Spurs, I'll say this, the Spurs, it's interesting to see them in a position where they don't have this kind of like magical aura about them where they just have a way to win games. They just looked like the basketball product that was on the court, which was, your best player was LaMarcus Aldridge and, they just had no shot against the other team. It looked like a different league. And it's just like, okay, the Spurs are a model organization, right? What do they say when they draw the Warriors in the first round? Like, do you think Greg Popovich was like, fuck? Do you think RC Buford was like, shit?
I mean, it is what it was, you know, like that series. I'm glad they were able to grab a game. For Pop, you know, it was just like one of those things that you don't have Kawhi. You're going up against a generational team. Like, yeah, sure, they don't have Steph, but I mean, it was never going to be a fight. They went, they battled. You know, LaMarcus battled.
Yeah, they got a win too, which I definitely think the Warriors.
It was a gentleman sweep.
The Warriors took their foot off the gas. They gave it to them. They gave them a win.
Yeah, I mean that. Yeah, it was a gentleman sweep. And it was just. I didn't like when Pop lost his wife, you know, just like
I hate it when real life interjects.
The series just didn't matter, you know.
It
was just like it's over. Just
yeah.
But it, I mean, it was nice to see some magic out of Ginobili, though. He still had some fight in him. That might be his final game, but
we thought that last year, man.
It was too bad. I don't know. I mean, Kawhi, you know, he's got. I'm never gonna be one who's going to, you know, shit on players and say. And take an owner's side on any matter. You know, he should do what he thinks is right for his financial future. But, I mean, just from a competitive perspective, it was disappointing that he didn't. You know, just seeing how much, like, Ginobili and Parker were battling.
Yeah, I hear you on that one, my friend. But also, on the other hand, we don't know a lot about the situation. We don't know about the Spurs side of things. We don't know about Kawhi's team's side of things.
Well, like apparently that quad injury can be complicating and it can lead to some long-term issues. Yeah. So that's why I'm saying like, I understand,
yeah.
But it's still disappointing.
What I hated most about the Spurs and what had to be their ugliest season in 20 years, definitely, their first season in 19 or 20 years where they didn't win 50 games. So what I hated most about this season for the Spurs is the coverage of Kawhi, the unending day in, day out speculation and drama about what is going on with Kawhi. Is he coming back? And I remember this with Derrick Rose too, and it's just, it's so annoying. It's just like, I don't even want to think about it. I don't even want to talk about it. And I just don't think it's like it's created by the media. The media says, oh, there's drama in San Antonio. But only because sports media is talking about it.
Well, okay, I'm going to counter this, though.
Sure.
First of all, the Spurs got, like, if that was another franchise that was happening, there would be so much more negative coverage about the turmoil. Because that was a crazy story. The team doctors cleared him. And he wasn't going to play because his doctors weren't. And there was definitely, like, there were some shots being taken. But, like, when Pop was being like, well, you're going to have to talk to his guys. Like, he clearly was kind
of
tired.
That was a post-game presser. He was stream of consciousness.
Okay, no. But then also, like, Tony Parker, he had, like, a quote where he was talking about how his injury was a lot more serious than Kawhi. Like, he said that. And that, I mean, that had to have been a little bit of a shock because he was talking about how he's back playing.
Well, didn't they rush Kawhi back last year?
No.
When he was...
No,
well,
they shut him down.
No, he was having ankle problems throughout this Houston series, and they brought him back for game one against Golden State, okay. and he aggravated it further. And Zaza gets the blame, but
yeah, but they sat him in game six. A lot of franchises wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, true.
The Spurs...
Look, now we're doing it. Now we're talking about the Kawhi drama. but hey...
The Spurs once sat Tim Duncan in a playoffs where he theoretically could have played because they were worried about his long-term future.
Yeah, you're right. Their model organization. What do you think? Is Kawhi going somewhere else? Is he a free agent?
No.
Nice. But he can demand a trade. He can force his way up.
Yeah.
Cool. Cool, man. There's only two more series I want to talk about. In the first round. And then after that, we'll get into second round matchups, give our award picks for this year. And then this episode's in the books. Let's talk about Philadelphia and Miami, man. First of all, I got to say, Philadelphia, they're so hype right now. Everybody's talking about them. They're the flavor of the month. They're a great mix of, like, transcendent youthful players and, like, gamey vets who do nothing but hit threes all day long. And then you have Miami, who I just don't have no idea how, like, a collection of such little talent was in the playoffs at all. And also... For a couple of games there, their focal point on the offensive end was Dwayne Wade, who they didn't even have until the trade deadline.
That was hilarious.
Who was on that team before?
I love how like Miami had like a hot streak before playoffs, all-star selections. And like, well, we got to give them somebody. So they made Dragic an all-star. And then you watch that series and you're like, Dragic was an all-star, but Simmons wasn't. But like Wade said it best though at the end. He's like, hey, sometimes a better team wins. And that was the deal.
That was after game four, yo. That Dwayne Wade was going out to the presser and being like, this thing's done. But yeah, I mean,
that was a fun series though. I had a good time.
Yeah.
I mean, the Sixers were clearly the better team.
Yeah. Yeah. You had a bunch of, vets who were, taking it to the Sixers being physical, and the Sixers just responded, didn't care.
The Heat, there was like moments like late in games where it was just like, they were just fouling every play and like daring the ref to call it every play.
The Sixers won game one without Embiid. Amazing.
Well, they like that lineup with Simmons and four shooters. And, like, it's not four guys that can shoot, which a lot of teams can do. It's four shooters, right? You put out, what are they doing? Redick, Bellinelli, Ilyasova, and Saric. All four of those guys are 40% shooters or higher.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that, like, you have sharp shooters around Simmons. That was a dynamic lineup. And then you got Embiid back, who's just such a, you know, his offensive game, like, I think it was getting affected a little by the mask. But defensively, though, he's such a presence at the rim. They look like a really solid team. I've always really liked Ilyasova, and it's nice to see him having success here in the playoffs. I think, and then it's funny because ever since he was a rap, I've never liked Bellinelli. I've always thought, I don't know, he's just, I've always considered him just kind of a chucker, and he's been dynamite so far, but it would not surprise me at all if he starts bricking everything. That guy takes bad shots. Like, he shoots like he's Steph Curry, but he's not Steph Curry.
You said it, my man. Let's move on. I just realized we got to be out of the booth in 8 minutes, my man. So, I didn't hear the last bit of what you said because I was looking at a text. I hope it was good. I hope it was dense basketball knowledge. Let's talk about, man, the weirdest series in the playoffs so far. Let's talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers versus the Indiana Pacers. What was going on in your mind when Pacers took that first game, and then ever since? I mean, crazy. LeBron went 7 in the first round against the Pacers.
The Pacers, they were just... like, as a team, they were just so much more superior. Like, it was amazing how bad the Cavs were outside of LeBron. Like, Kevin Love, remember when Kevin Love could just score from anywhere? Like, he was such a versatile offensive player.
Yeah.
Like, he was getting dominated. Like, when he was trying to post up Thaddeus Young, he was doing nothing. All he could do, he's just now a spot-up shooter. That's all he can do. And he's a poor defender. And then, like, you look around, like, I mean, George Hill was hurt, but he wasn't really... Jordan Clarkson was terrible. Rodney Hood was non-existent. Tristan Thompson ended up playing really nice in Game 7. He was, like, he was a DNP for a lot of the series. Like, that team, it was amazing. Like, I was one of the people that, after that big trade deadline, I was like, okay, maybe they can do something here. They have some interesting pieces.
I was optimistic.
And they blew out the Celtics, like, with Kyrie, and I was like, okay, you know, you got something here. And now their four best players were the four holdovers from the last couple of years.
You know, you look at, by the way, Tristan Thompson was huge.
Yeah, today. I was happy for him.
Yeah, he started his first start in the playoffs, and he had...
I was disappointed that he was with his infidelity, but...
I know nothing about this. I know nothing about this.
Oh, he cheated on his pregnant wife.
That is terrible. That is terrible news. But also, has he not been performing well as of late?
Yeah.
Why was he on the bench?
He's had a very tough season. He's had some injuries.
With his ability, why?
Well, they made the decision before the year that they were going to go with Tristan Thompson at the five. And right away, you know, that kind of marginalized him within the team. And yeah, he just hasn't played great. He hasn't had the same energy.
Who at the five?
Kevin Love.
Okay.
Because cool. They started with Kevin Love at the five. I believe Tristan Thompson started the year hurt, I think. Not 100% sure.
But I mean, like, games 1-6 of this series, you're starting Jose Calderon. I mean, I just don't, how is that happening? Can you explain that? I just don't understand basketball. Can you explain that
to me? Well, Calderon's, he's actually been, so, like, I don't want to say solid, but he's like, they actually have a good record with him because he's like George Hill has been banged up and Jordan Clarkson is Jordan Clarkson. I don't know. He's very inconsistent. And so I understand Calderon, but at the end of the day, if Calderon's your starting point guard,
yeah,
like good luck beating the Raptors, let alone good luck beating, you know, the Warriors.
All right, dude. So we got 5 minutes left here on the welcome back tour for Hamster Wheel Sports. I forgot how long we can talk on like any given series book. We made our way through the first round reflections. So we got literally 5 minutes to do second round matchups. Oh, yeah. Okay, so let's start with Toronto and Cleveland. What the hell is going to go down in this series, man?
I have no idea. This is going to come down to... Okay, so... the Raptors have to be able to stay out on shooters, right? And so this is going to come down to OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam. They have to be able to, you know, somewhat hold their own against LeBron. Yeah, you got to stay out on shooters, but at the same time, you can't just be giving up dunks, you know, which is something the Raptors sometimes do because they're so committed to that. Because on the other end, Cleveland's defense sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they suck in the half court. They suck in transition. They have no rim protection. It'll be interesting if Tristan Thompson continues to start because Tristan Thompson allows JV to be on the court.
I see.
When they play Kevin, JV can't guard Kevin Love. It just doesn't work. But what they've done, an interesting matchup they've done, is they've instead put JV on Jeff Green, which I think is a really smart move, and putting Ibaka or whoever else is on the floor on.
Daring Jeff Green to,
yeah, or also just make a play, you know, yeah. let Jeff Green try and drive. Like, yeah, obviously JV, you know, it's a little like not ideal matchup, but at the same time, if Jeff Green's going one-on-one all game, like, okay, do that.
Sweet. So you got to be licking your chops, man. Like, this looks like the Toronto Raptors are favored. They got to be.
Yep. I'm not going to say it confidently. Like, I'm not just because LeBron... No one on the Raptors have proved that they can hold their own to LeBron, you know? And there's a chance that he could just go off and dominate. But at the same time, that guy's got to be exhausted. The workload he put on in Indiana. And, they just can't get shredded by him because they can score on this team. They're not a good defensive team.
So we're out of time, Book, unfortunately. Sorry. What's your prediction for Raps-Cavs?
Raps in seven.
Raps in seven, baby. Oh, man.
I think home team wins every
That
game.
Would be... If they vanquish the demon of LeBron James, you could die then, right?
I could.
That's the championship, man. Doesn't get sweeter than that. Okay, quickly. Don't analyze these series at all. Just give me your picks, okay?
Okay.
Houston, Utah.
Houston in six.
Pelicans, Warriors.
Warriors in four.
Philly and Boston.
That's a tough one. I'm going to give you one quick small tidbit. Sure. Very few guys have guarded Embiid well. There's only two players left in the East that have done it. Jakob Poeltl, you know, possible conference finals, but Al Horford. Al Horford has guarded Embiid well, and I think I'm going to actually go Celtics in seven.
Yeah, let's do it, man. Oh, dude, Hamster Wheel Sports is going to be fun if... the Celtics and Raptors are duking it out in the conference finals. So, all right. Well, I'm glad to be back with you here, Book. Next week, we're going to bring in Judge James Ryan. We're going to be full squad. And we're going to break down these playoffs, man. So, remember, one last thing. Sports!
Shoot from downtown for three! It's 56-45 at the half. Technical, number 23, 3-second violation, number 11. Traveling, number 4.